kids. Thanks for tuning in to this, the inaugural BME podcast. I'll be your host, Jordan Ginsberg. You may know me from my articles on BME News and my daily hilarious posts on Modblog. Now, I don't know about you, but I was a big fan of the old BME radio interviews, so I figured it was about time we revive that format and spruce it up a little bit for this wondrous and exciting new era of the internet. Anyway, this is very much in the experimental stages, as you can probably tell, and I make no guarantees about the overall quality of what you're about to hear, but stick with it. We're definitely going to iron out these kinks and get this sounding as sort of semi-professional as possible. We're going to try to do at least one of these a week to start, and if they're popular, we'll do them even more regularly. Now, some fair warning, I can be a bit of a mumbler sometimes, so if I start slurring my words or otherwise ruining what should be a pleasurable oral experience, please, by all means, flood the comment section and tell me what a miserable piece of shit I am. Actually, flood the comments anyway and tell us what you think about all of this. And with that, we're off. Coming up next is our very first guest, the father of modern suspension, as he loves to be called, Mr. Alan Faulkner. Stick around. First guest on the inaugural BME podcast, Alan Faulkner. How you doing?
I'm doing good.
How excited are you to be the very first guest?
I'm actually extremely excited. I was not aware I was going to be the first, but then I heard through the grapevine I was, and I'm pretty happy about it.
All right, so on a scale of 1 to 10, of all the things you've done today, where does this fit in?
Well, I've been stressed out dealing with the suspension convention all day, and now I have to sound good on the radio, or actually on the interwebs. So I'd say it's a highlight of the day, but it also kind of stresses me out, too.
All right, so why don't you tell us about the suspension convention, the new SusCon that you're organizing?
Okay, well, this is, it's been 8 years since we did the first SusCon here in Dallas. And the whole reason for this one, well, actually there's two reasons. One, it's my 40th birthday, and I figured what better way to throw a big party is to bring all your friends into town and go ahead.
I can't believe you're only 40.
Can't believe I'm only 40? Thanks, you're so sweet, jerk. So I figured, you know, why not throw a big party, and a good reason to bring everybody into town is, you know, have a big suspension convention. Plus, we've been needing to do one for a while, and I finally have a space that I can use that's great. It's perfect. It's got a big courtyard. And a whole lot of things kind of came together at the right time. And really what started this more than anything else was that most suspension conventions have been just people getting together and hanging from hooks, which, yes, there is definitely going to be that.
Right.
This convention.
This one seems a little different, though.
Well, it is a little different. And the reason for it is that suspension's been getting bigger and bigger. It's been in the media. It's been in the news. There's legislation and all kinds of stuff going on. And the big problem that we have as a community is that we're separated not only geographically, but we're also separated, and that we don't talk enough, and we don't interact enough, and we don't work together enough, because most of the suspension teams are really far apart. And the most recent thing that happened that kind of sealed the deal on this was there was a suspension accident that happened in Florida.
Right.
And it was just one of those things that, you know, it could have been avoided, but it wasn't like the suspension team that did it was doing anything that they thought was wrong. It's just that there's just not a lot of good training out there. And you know, we need to get everybody together, and we need to get everybody talking. We need to get everybody on the same page, safety-wise. And so this is kind of the whole idea behind the convention. And you know, the other things that fell into place, like one of the guys that comes into my shop all the time happens to be a former Cirque du Soleil rigger, and he expressed interest in coming out and well, sort of helping, mostly chastising. He says he does not believe in what we do, and he doesn't feel that it's safe. And I was trying to explain to him that actually that's our thing, is that we are trying to be safe. And so he wants to come out and work with everybody and lecture on the safety side of rigging. And there's a whole lot of reasons that I want to pull this together. And it just, it kind of fell into place.
Right. So what's the, is it over a weekend?
It is over a weekend. It's April 17th through 19th. The 17th is actually my birthday, and we're throwing a big party at a local venue called the Lizard Lounge,
right,
which should be a lot of fun. Eric Sprigg, the Lizard Man, he's going to come out and headline, and Hova from Pain Solution in Norway is coming out to perform, and we've got a couple of the people that we're still potentially going to have perform as well. That's not all the details are worked out yet, but should be a good party. The only downside to it is that it's the day before the convention, so I got to make sure that people don't get too wasted, and I'm not going to really be able to relax that much. But you know, a pre-party is a good thing, good way to get it started.
Of course. So are there going to be classes this time around?
Definitely going to be classes. It's going to be kind of free form, but the classes that we set up officially at this point, there's going to be a rigging class run by Dave Piccolo, who's a the former Cirque du Soleil rigger. There's going to be a performance class that Steve Joyner from CORE and Hova from Pain Solution are going to get together and do a bit of talking about safety and multiple other things going on with performance, dealing with promoters and insurance and travel and so on and so forth. Brian Decker is going to do a suturing class, because it's one of the things a lot of suspension practitioners don't really know how to do is what happens if you have a tear. So suturing will be a good hands-on thing. Oliver Gilson, who designed the Gilson hooks, he's going to make it out. And although he's not going to do a formal lecture, he is going to do sort of a roundtable discussing hook manufacturing and design and potentially getting into the future of that. And another thing that I've just added today, I really haven't put up on the site, is that I'm going to have all the information available to everybody who comes on how we organize these suscons, including spreadsheets and basic ideas of percentages of money per person and supplies per person, to kind of help other people in the future if they want to put together their own convention. Here's the bare bones of how we've done it up to this point.
Right. Now, have you or has anybody else ever done a suspension convention like on this scale?
Well, I don't know. They keep getting bigger and bigger and bigger. So it's really hard to tell whose is the biggest. I mean, back in the days when the guys from Rites of Passage were doing Rhode Island, theirs was enormous. We were hanging, 60, 70 people in a weekend. But then there's a crew up in Portland that does December 11th, first Monday in December. I forget exactly the name of it and the date. And I've heard rumors that they've hung several hundred people in a weekend, although the one I went to didn't hang that many people, and I'm not really sure if it's how good the records were or not. I heard this, via the rumor mill, so I'm not sure how many people. And the Wings of Desire crew in Norway, theirs is big, but theirs is even though it's big, it doesn't feel big. When you get out there, it just runs so smoothly. It doesn't feel like an assembly line. So I'm not sure who has put together the biggest. I'm actually kind of scared as to how big this thing is going to be, because I only put the information up 24 hours ago, and I've already got 30 confirmed people. And,
30
and we
already?
Haven't even posted.
Wow.
Yeah, and I haven't even posted it anywhere yet. Once we actually get it on BME News and MySpace and blogging it and everything, it might be a little out of control. But just because people register and apply doesn't mean they're coming. I have to kind of say, okay, hold on. We have to make sure that we have enough room and material and supplies, because this thing is not only a nightmare to put together, but it's expensive. And we have to make sure that we have enough food and chairs and supplies and hotel rooms and everything for everyone. Okay.
Well, what I actually meant as far as the scale is as far as the educational component as well. Because that seems like it's a newer addition to this kind of event.
Well, the funny thing is that even the original SUSCON that I put on, it was supposed to be about education. And that's really kind of been my angle all along. And after that, the Suscon started turning into just places for people to get together and hang. The Norwegian Suscon, the Wings of Desire, they do a bit of education as well, mostly lecture, not so much hands-on education. But yeah, this one I really want to focus on education. I want to get all of these suspension groups. We have 20-plus suspension groups from all over the world, people coming in from Norway, Germany, England, Australia, all over the U.S. and Canada. And I'm wanting to, everybody to come together basically on the same level. I don't really want anyone to think that anyone is superior or inferior to each other. I want everybody to sit around and talk and say, hey, you know, this is the way we're doing things because we all have something to learn from each other. But on the same token, I want everybody to also kind of figure out some minimum standards of this is the way this should be done because, you know, there's no 100% right way to do it, but there's plenty of wrong ways. And I want everyone to sit down and go, okay, why don't we do it this way? Why don't we do things like I want everyone to quit using 550 cord, which breaks. I want to switch over to, you know, some of the Kevlar lines and the Tech 12s and things like that were actually designed for holding human weight and no longer using quick link, switching over to shackles again for holding human weight and having backups when we're up over 10, 12 feet in the air and, you know, things like this. A lot of the safety protocols people need to start following them.
Right. Now, you mentioned before the accident at the, it was a suspension done at a tattoo convention in Florida over the summer, and a line broke and a guy fell and broke his leg and could have been hurt a lot worse. But we posted an editorial by Ron Garza on BME after, and then we posted a follow-up by Joe D'Amato, who was involved in the suspension. And there were differing points of view on how that was handled. And some people thought that when an accident like that happens, it should all just be very positive, just support the people, don't criticize in public. How do you feel that it was handled by all parties?
Wow, okay. That's a tough one. I have very mixed emotions on it, just because a lot of people were coming to me and asking me about the whole situation. I would like to say, first of all, I think that whenever something happens, responsibility needs to be taken, that passing the buck is not the way to handle a situation. Now, the guys that it happened to, they, you know, it caught them off guard. They were working within what they thought were the proper safety parameters. And, you know, unfortunately they weren't, but it wasn't something that they were doing maliciously. It was just, it just happened because they're working beyond their training level. And I know these guys personally, and I know that, you know, they have their hearts and their heads in the right place. It's just a piece of equipment that was being used failed, and under investigation and in retrospect, it was definitely the wrong piece of equipment to be used. It got loaded incorrectly and broken. There was no safety backup. That being said, I have mixed emotions. I do think that the information should have been more forthcoming. I think that someone should have taken responsibility when things go wrong. Somebody is at fault, you know, and as a suspension team, the team and specifically the leader of the team needs to step up and say, this is what happened, and, you know, not hide behind things, but actually come out and say, you know, this is what went wrong, this is who was responsible, you know. And if people are not willing to take that position, then they really shouldn't be working in the public eye. And that's kind of the problem here, is that if people want to hang each other in their backyards, you know, if they want to do these body modifications behind closed doors, let them do what they want. But once they start doing things in public and shows, and there's video cameras around and the internet with people putting things on YouTube within 10 minutes after they happen, you really have to be careful about what you're doing, and you have to take responsibility for it. And if that is not your personality, if it's not your personality to be able to stand up and say, this is what went wrong, I am responsible, and, you know, take responsibility for your actions, then maybe you shouldn't be working in the public eye. It's it you have to have a real thick skin. Believe me, I have to deal with that on a regular basis on
sure.
multiple different levels. Is by once you become a public persona, you mean you get attacked left and right, and you have to have a thick skin, and you have to deal with it, and you have to roll with the punches. And back to your original question, I think that some things were handled poorly. I think some things were handled really well. I think that some things were taken too personally. I think some things, you know, were taken enough to heart. So I have very, very, very mixed emotions. I'm just very happy that it could have been a lot worse. He could have died, and he didn't. He's doing much better now, but the injury to his leg is going to give him problems for the rest of his life, most likely.
Right. Now, related to all of this, you brought this to my attention, is that the state of Nevada is now looking to ban a whole lot of things, suspension among them. Can you tell us a bit more about that?
Okay. I know very little about what's going on in the state of Nevada right now. I have a copy of the proposed laws, and there are numerous things on the laws that affect the body modification community. Suspension is a very, very small part of it.
Right.
But they are specifically stating that suspension piercing is going to be illegal
right.
by body piercers, I think is where they're directly putting it. Now, does that mean that suspension is illegal? No, probably not. The insertion of hooks by a licensed piercer is illegal, which means that people who are not licensed can still do it. I think they're opening a can of worms there without all the information. I'm a fan of regulation to a certain extent. I think that regulation can be a good thing. It can also, it's a double-edged sword. It can be a bad thing as well. But I think they're throwing something into the law that they don't fully understand. And it really surprises me that the state of Nevada, of all places, would do this, because
right.
Nevada is the Wild West. It's steeped in the tradition of, you know, crazy stunts and events and things. And I don't understand why, of all places, they would do this. So I just think that somebody has thrown it into the law very quickly without doing the proper research. And I'm hoping through introduction of, you know, materials and showing that we have education and things, that the legislature will actually remove that part of the law. But I don't know too much yet. David Vedra is the one who brought it to my attention.
Right.
And I have not yet had a chance to talk to him either about it, because he's been quite busy.
Yeah, we're hopefully going to have him on soon. But
Dave's been great for the industry, because he is a nurse. He works well with legislation. He's worked with legislation and government quite a bit in the past, and he's very intelligent and very articulate. And he's a very good person to speak up. But unfortunately, things like, for instance, suspension, not everyone is always that articulate or that normal looking, because it really helps to have that very square haircut and suit and tie look when you're dealing with the government. I'm still fairly much on the edge of that. I'm close where I still kind of clean up pretty well, but more and more, I mean, my hands are tattooed now, my neck is tattooed, and I wear my lip rings all the time, and my head is shaved. So I'm not quite such a Republican-looking guy like I used to be.
Right. Yeah, because looking at this list of things as banned, it almost looks like they just went on BME and started checking things off, like scarification, implantation of jewelry or objects under the skin, dermal punching, suspension piercing, but even things like foot binding and corseting, with no real definition of, is this like corseting with piercings or traditional corseting? So it's a really bizarre list.
Yeah, it makes no sense. And also the law is specifically the tattoo and body piercing regulation. So it doesn't really even apply to a lot of things there, because, I mean, come on, foot binding, how does that apply to the tattoo and piercing industry? So I'm not really sure how that got thrown in there. I think somebody just felt that they needed to speak up and put it out there. You know, in the long run, it might be a good thing. It might actually open people's eyes to say, okay, well, we have all these things going on, and, you know, maybe they should be regulated. Foot binding, I don't know. I'm quite a loss on that one. But, you know, there are things like scarification. Scarification is a very serious art form. It's growing and flourishing. And, it, you know, it really should have some kind of regulation on it. And it's still very underground. And I'm not saying that the lawmakers need to go out there and write laws, but you know, at the same point, I think if we're going to regulate something like tattooing and piercing, well, then why not write good laws about scarification?
Sure. But as far as suspension goes, though, I mean, I've spoken to people, and I don't necessarily agree with this, and I don't know if you do either, but some people almost prefer that suspension didn't fall into certain, wasn't legislated, and suspension, because it has become so big and so ubiquitous in a lot of ways, some people prefer it the way it used to be. Like, do you think there's any benefit to it sort of being forced back underground, or do you think it's here to stay and it should just be taken care of with the law in mind?
Well, okay. I don't see eye to eye with some of the older suspension practitioners, like, for instance, Fakir. Fakir and I have known each other for many, many, many years. In fact, I accredit him to really starting my career as a body piercer and introducing me to the body modification industry and community. However, we don't see eye to eye on things like suspension. I've been on national television numerous times, and I've been quoted as talking about suspension being a kinetic art form, and you know, comparing it to things like the X Games and stuff like that, and it drives a lot of the ritual practitioners crazy. But you know, it's one of those things of, it's my body, I should be able to do what I want with it, and I take that on all levels, including suspension. So I understand the ritual side of it. I participate to a certain level. One of the reasons that I like all the media exposure and things like that is that suspension is now, it's almost a household term. Like, you can bring up to anybody, anywhere, oh, you know, people that hang from hooks? You're like, oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. So they know what it is. Once it becomes something like that, once it's been on Ripley's Believe It or Not, and it's been on national television, it's an accepted practice to a certain extent. So pulling it out of the underground and putting it into the public eye, yes, you do put it under a microscope and people do scrutinize you for it. But on the other hand, it makes it an accepted thing. We are not a bunch of Satanists. You know, we're not doing this to try and, you know, lure children in or anything like this. We're doing this as, you know, on some aspects, we're doing it as a show and as entertainment. And because, you know, it's artistic expression on some levels, the general public can accept it a lot more. It's, when you start throwing in spiritual, religious, ritual connotations, all of a sudden people can't understand and people can't accept it. But you make it an art form, and then people are like, oh, okay, well, that's not my thing, but I can appreciate what you're doing. I can understand to a certain level what you're doing. And even though I would never do it because, wow, that looks painful or whatever, it is an amazing thing. And because of that, I think that people accept it a bit more.
Right. So all of it just to say, you are probably in favor of some sort of legislation to enshrine it in law as something that people can do?
Well, you know,
or is that
like
not that easy?
Legislation is a double-edged sword. And right, something like suspension, where it's very, very hard to explain what it is and how it works and everything, legislation, it's difficult. Like, for instance, rigging. There are very few concrete laws regarding rigging. Rigging is actually the most dangerous part about suspension. The whole inserting a hook into the skin is where they want to throw in the regulation. That is the easiest part of suspension. That is the safest part of the suspension. The flying people through the air from thin little pieces of rope, that is the dangerous part. And that's the part that's never
right,
going to be regulated. So,
right,
so regulation's difficult. When it comes to sterility, sure, regulation's great. When it comes to rigging safety, how do you regulate an industry that's been around for hundreds and hundreds of years that doesn't have any regulation. So it's kind of hard to just take us and say, okay, we're going to regulate you guys, even though these thousands upon thousands of other people that have been doing this kind of stuff, but not necessarily hanging people from hooks, but hanging people from rope in the air or working on commercial job sites, things like that. When, you know, OSHA regulates them to a certain extent, but it's a very minor regulation.
Right. Okay. Now, moving on just a little bit, I want to talk about one particular suspension that you, I believe, were a part of a little while ago and that we featured on BME, and that was Chris Glunt's six-hour suspension.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'll give you a little background on that. First of all, Chris is one of those really, really, really just tough individuals. Like when you think of the tough guy, man, Chris is it. He can go. He just kind of wanted to push his body to the next further extreme. There's a lot of people who enter suspension, including me, get into it thinking, okay, I want to have some kind of amazing experience. I want to see God. I want to leave my body. I want to have some kind of religious experience. A lot of us don't have that. A lot of us that hang from a hook, we do get an experience out of it, but nothing that you constantly read about in primitive societies and things. So Chris really wanted to push himself. So he, I believe he didn't sleep for 2 days. He fasted, not quite for sure how long, 10 days,
right.
I think 2 weeks. I'm not sure exactly how long he fasted.
Yeah.
The whole idea was to put his body into a state of shock to have some kind of experience. From what I understand, he didn't have the experience that he expected. I'm still not quite sure what his experience was, just because he was very bummed about it because it wasn't what he was expecting.
Right.
So it's really kind of funny because the world record for suspension, if people want to start calling it, it's 6 hours. Now, there's stories of Sufis hanging for much longer, days, weeks, things like that. But a lot of the stories that come along with the Sufis are, I don't know, they're not always true. They're embellished quite a bit. I'm not quite sure what the technical record would be, but what people are recognizing as being the world's records have been Chris Angel's suspension, which was 5 hours and something, and then Matt Zane did a 6 hour suspension. So technically, Chris either tied or beat it, but that wasn't even what he was trying to do. He was just trying to push his body limits. If he hadn't fasted, if he hadn't gone through sleep deprivation, I think he probably could have hung for even longer. Really, I think the only reason he came down was because he didn't have a good medical staff sitting there watching him. He said he was, his legs were feeling numb and he was cold and he was just miserable. Now, if he had somebody there with him who kept pushing and kept pushing, he probably could have gone longer and may have entered an altered state that he wanted to. But, he didn't quite reach that point. I still think what he did was amazing. And if nothing else, I think he's laid the groundwork for other people to try to do an even more extreme version of that. My only worry is there is a safety aspect, because part of suspension is you are flirting with shock, which is a potentially life-threatening condition. And Chris just happens to be one of those people that doesn't really need someone to take care of him. Now, I know plenty of people involved in suspension that don't know their limits and could hurt themselves, could push themselves too far. And this, you know, this brings me back to how I think that suspension teams are really the way to go, because you need to have people keeping an eye on each other. You need to have people checking each other, second-guessing each other. I mean, this is all part of working as a team.
But even if you're working as a team and somebody wants to try something like this and the team is not prepared to deal with a bad reaction, what kind of training do you think that team should have? Or is it just a matter of people being there to have the presence of mind to say, okay, we got to get them to a hospital, or we have to do this or that?
Well, for something like this, there's two main components. First of all, experience. People need to have the experience of knowing when to stop a suspension, when something has gone wrong. But the other thing is medical training, that a lot of suspension groups, they have nurses, they have EMTs, they have paramedics, they have different medical trained staff that are part of the suspension team. I personally think that the whole group should have, the very basics, cross-contamination, bloodborne pathogen training, first aid, CPR. These are just very, very basics. But when we're talking things like 6-hour suspensions, I think realistically, the very least should have a paramedic or EMT on staff. A nurse would be even better, especially someone that normally deals with trauma and shock and things like that. So, I think that if somebody tries something like this again, that there probably should be somebody working, somebody working in the medical field there to keep an eye on things and to make sure that if something does go wrong, that the person can be taken care of.
Right. Okay. Just bring it all back home, and to touch on something that you mentioned earlier, obviously suspension is seen as being very much in the same league, whether it's the people who are participating in it or the way that legislators see it. It's seen as being in the same league as body piercing and tattooing and other forms of body modification. Do you think that's a fair way to designate it, or do you think it is something different?
Well, I think it's completely different. The body modification aspect of suspension is only one very small portion of it. And I think that is one of the misconceptions and one of the biggest dangers, because the insertion of hooks and the removal of hooks and the care to not cross-contaminate is really not the danger. The danger is the rigging and
right.
dropping people.
Right.
And a lot of people don't realize that they enter the whole suspension from a body modification standpoint. They see images on BME and TV and magazines and tattoo conventions, things like that, and they think, well, hey, I'm a body piercer. I can put a hook in. I can do this. And granted, yes, somebody does need to be there to do that job. But that's only one facet of it. And that's one of the reasons that I constantly push rigging, is that the most recent really bad accident has happened from a rigging failure. And I think from now on, this is going to be the big problem. This is always going to be rigging. And that when you take that aspect of it, it's a whole completely different field than body modification. So is it a part of it? Yes. But it's a different animal altogether, and it's hard to explain to anybody exactly where it's supposed to fit, because I'm not sure it does fit anywhere.
All right, Alan, do you want to plug the SUSCon one more time? Tell people where they
sure.
can go find information and sign up for it.
Well, the SUSCon, the easiest way to find information is to go to the website, which is suspension.org, O-R-G. And suspension.org is a website that I run and maintain that is purely informational, and it's for the body modification community dealing specifically with suspension. Actually, it's not just for body modification. It's for anybody who's
right.
interested in suspension. So the forums have a lot of information on there. There's a lot of links heading out. Most of the links head back to BME, and I want to thank BME because they host the site.
Oh, do what we can. All right. Well, thanks. Thank you again for being our very first podcast guest, and we hope to talk to you again soon, and maybe get some reports from you during your SUSCon.
Okay, that'd be great.
All right, and if we don't talk to you before then, happy birthday, old man.
Thanks. Yeah, thanks a lot.
All right, thanks a lot.